It's wonderful to finally be here. I will talk today about a topic which I have a feeling has been widely covered in this conference, even though I have no idea if that was the case. But I will actually talk about an algebra-geometric perspective on AGT. Once again, I'm pretty sure it has, even the algebra-geometric perspective has been touched upon, but I want to focus on this aspect. So algebra-geometric means that we start off with a smooth projective surface. So let's actually do this. Let's start with S. We can weaken the projective assumption, but I want to keep smooth. And let's have an ample divisor inside it. Associated with these things, we can say let M sub R be the moduli space of stable sheaves on S. I'm not going to define what stable means, but I will tell you the topological information that gives this S, this F. So I want my my sheaves to have rank R, and I want them to have fixed first Chern class. I'm not going to write it down, even though I should write M R sub C1. I'm not going to write down this C1 because it will not change throughout this talk. But varying second Chern class, arbitrary C2. And actually, as a consequence of the stability of these sheaves, then this will actually be very important at some point in this talk. This C2 is bounded below. This is a consequence of the so-called Bogomolov inequality. I don't remember it off the top of my head, but I think C2 has to be greater than or equal to this thing, or the other way around. So we have a moduli space of sheaves, and let's make a couple of assumptions. So assumption one will be that it's actually an assumption on the surface. So assume that either the canonical of the surface is trivial or the first Chern class of the canonical intersects the ample divisor H negatively. And this assumption is important for us because it implies that the moduli space M sub R is smooth. Probably shouldn't go any further down, right? Okay, so let me make another assumption here. Let's also assume that the GCD of our chosen rank R and the chosen first Chern class of these sheaves is 1. And a consequence of this fact is that there exists a universal sheaf U, and we will actually encounter it on M times S. So it's a universal sheaf whose fiber over a point describing a sheaf F times S is F itself. You can weaken this assumption and work with what is known as a twisted sheaf, but you're going to have to work locally on the moduli space, and I don't want to go into this computation, so we just make this assumption over here. What is the main theorem which I want to talk about? I'll state it first, and then I'll say a couple of words about what it means. The K-theory group KM, so the K-theory group, the algebraic K-theory group of this moduli space, because I assumed it to be smooth, it's kind of unambiguous what I mean by the K-theory group, is a module. And it actually turns out that this is a notion I'm going to have to explain for an algebra, let's say the algebra. This is an algebra which I'll have to define for you, and I'll do so in a second, called WQ1, Q2, GLR. So what this algebra means is the deformed W algebra of type GLR. And I will define it for you in 10 minutes or so, but I just want to have this theorem on the board. Let's actually say a couple of things about it before I define it. So this is the Z Q1 plus or minus Q2 plus or minus sim algebra given by explicit generators and relations. So I'll show you what the explicit generators and relations are in a bit. but I just want to point out that the parameter ring of this algebra is symmetric polynomials in two variables, Q1 and Q2. In the limit as the form W algebra converges to the usual W algebra, the central charge of the usual W algebra is the logarithm in base Q1 of Q2. So a central charge is encoded in the logarithmic ratio, whatever, between Q1 and Q2. But I want to say what module means. So I promised I would give you explicit generators and relations for this algebra. So let's assume we have them. Being a module, by definition, means that there exists a abelian group homomorphism. And this homomorphism goes from the algebra if this were an honest algebra action, you would need a homomorphism from the algebra to the endomorphisms of the module, which in this case would be the endomorphisms of Km. But in this case, you don't go to the endomorphisms of Km. You go to hom from Km to Km times S. And let's call this homomorphism phi. So this homomorphism will take an algebra element A, and it will produce a homomorphism phi A. Now, of course, you don't just want an abelian group homomorphism. You want it to have some properties which will make it merit being called an action. And these are the properties here. So satisfying the following compatibility conditions. So I'll tell you what these are. And in a bit, I'll probably show you why the extra factor of S is actually important here, and we can't really do without it. So if you want to have a homomorphism, you have to connect phi A and phi B with phi of A times B. So let's actually write the property here. Phi sub A B, how do we compose homomorphisms phi A and phi B, which go from Km to Km times S? Well, there's only one actual thing you can do. So you can start off with phi B, and it's going to take you to Km times S. And once you're here, you can apply phi A on the first factor and then the identity on the S factor. And you end up here, Km times S times S. And once you're here, how do you get back to Km times S? You restrict to the diagonal. There's not much you can do. So id M times diagonal pullback, and you end up in K of M times S. So that's the first property which mimics the multiplicativity of this assignment phi here. There are a couple more properties, and one I want to focus on stems from the fact that the W algebra is an algebra over this coefficient ring. So I'd like to tell you how to do phi of C times A. Let me just say for all A and B in the algebra, and for all C in the ground field, in the ground ring, which is Q1 plus or minus 1, Q2 plus or minus 1 sim. So if you multiply an algebra element with a scalar, essentially, the compatibility condition is that what you get comes by taking the homomorphism corresponding to A and then just multiplying on the second factor. So you do identity on M times multiplication by F of C, and you end up in Km times S, where F is the ring homomorphism from the coefficient ring of the W algebra, which is this thing, to the K-theory of S. Is the ring homomorphism. To define this ring homomorphism, I just have to tell you where it sends the generators. And it does so by sending the sum Q1 plus Q2 to the class of the cotangent bundle, and the product, which by the way I'll denote by Q just for simplicity, to the class of the canonical bundle. So that's property two. And one more property which I want to show you, and which will actually be very geometrically relevant, is what happens when you take a commutator of two such operators. The property is that the commutator of phi A phi B is actually delta lower star of phi of the commutator of AB divided by the scalar 1 minus Q1, 1 minus Q2. So there's a couple of things to unpack in this formula here. I have to explain what the two sides mean. Well, I'll explain the left-hand side because it's probably the more controversial one. So the left-hand side is the difference of the following two compositions. I will write down some operators which go from the k-theory of M to the k-theory of M times S times S. And actually, what you should do is pretty standard. I mean, as long as you want in this setting to end up in M times S times S. So the first one does this thing, it S, and the second one does the same thing with the orders of A and B switched, but also the order of the S factors switched. And here you do id M times flip. Okay, M times S times S. So what this property here is saying is that the commutator, which by this logic is a homomorphism from Km to Km times S times S, is actually supported on the diagonal of M times S times S. And what it is on the diagonal, it's just the operator corresponding to the commutator of the symbols A and B. Implicit in this formula is the fact that the commutator of anything is a multiple of 1 minus Q1, 1 minus Q2, and we will see that in a second. So what do these formulas mean? Now, I spent 5 minutes of your time showing you a bunch of formulas. Why are they meaningful? Well, imagine for a second that instead of k-theory, you had cohomology. If you had cohomology, then cohomology of M times S, you have a QNet formula, it's cohomology of M tensor cohomology of S, and then you can think of the cohomology of S as being a ground ring, or something like a parameter ring for this action. Properties 1 and 2 are just saying that the action here should be cohomology of S linear. Property 3 is saying a more geometric thing, and that I want to explain for a bit. So the operators phi sub A, which are implicit in the definition of this theorem, are defined by so-called Hecke modifications of sheaves at a single point. I'll show you a formula at some point later in this talk. What this formula is saying is that if you take the commutator of two Hecke modifications at different points, you get zero. But if you take Hecke modifications at the same point, which is exactly what being concentrated on the diagonal is saying, then you have a non-zero contribution, and the non-zero contribution of Hecke modifications at the same point is precisely encoded by, the action of the element commutator of AB. So this is what the main theorem is saying. Now, let's actually put this in a box, because...
I'm a bit confused.
Yes.
The bracket and this W thing is both an algebra and the Lie algebra.
Well, it's an algebra, so this thing is just the commutator in the algebra.
Okay.
And it's going to be a multiple of 1 minus Q1, 1 minus Q2, so everything is going to be integral.
It's not graded.
It is graded, yep.
The last axiom is independent of the first.
Yep. Well, the first one is only a statement of operators from Km to Km times S. The last one is stronger because you actually map in Km times S times S. So if you were to take axiom 3 and restrict it with a diagonal in S, it would follow from 1. But if you don't restrict it with that diagonal in S, it's a priori a stronger statement. So the restriction of this property to the diagonal in S, it follows from property 1, but not the full property. There are two gradings on this algebra. One of them is going to be compatible with the grading on K-theory by the second Chern class of sheaves, and the other one doesn't really appear geometrically. I mean, it does, but you have to work in equivariant K-theory, and I guess only in the case of A2. So one of the gradings on this algebra, which is exactly the one a grading corresponding to vertex operator algebras, it has the effect of modifying the second Chern class of sheaves accordingly. The second grading, it doesn't appear in general.
So can I ask just a question? Do you assume that MR is compact? Does it follow from your assumption?
Yes, it follows. Well, this assumption implies that stable is the same thing as semi-stable and the surface is projective.
And by sheaves, you mean torsion free sheaves?
Well, in the projective case, you work with stable sheaves. And in that case, you have a compact moduli space. In the non-projective case, you would replace a stable high-framed, and you could still carry through this whole thing, but equivariantly. So I want to say that from the point of view of physics, what this statement is doing is it's algebra-geometrifying and deforming a certain following interpretation of AGT. So when you degenerate from K-theory to cohomology, and when you work with sheaves on A2, then the object here is the cohomology of the moduli space of instantons on A2, which is like R4. And what this theorem would be saying in that limit is that the cohomology of the moduli space of instantons is acted on by the actual W algebra of type GLR, which is the symmetry algebra of total field theory. And that is the correspondence between gauge theory and conformal field theory, which is given by, which is prescribed by AGT. So this here is a K-theoretic algebra geometric version of that thing that globalizes. So it makes sense for an arbitrary surface. Also, I do want to say one more thing. So the algebra here, a priori, is independent of the surface. But for a given surface, what every single element of this algebra, it doesn't give you a single homomorphism on Km. It essentially gives you as many endomorphisms of Km as the dimension of the K-theory of S. If you believe the existence of a QNet formula, and if you believe that the K-theory of S is a rank D-dimensional vector space, then for each element of the algebra, you get D endomorphisms of Km. So in a moral sense, you should really think of this W algebra as being a single W algebra independent of the surface, tensor the K-theory of the surface itself. So that's the dependence of the algebra on the surface. But it's nicer to package them into this more axiomatic definition of what an action means. Oh yeah, certainly. So if you fix your favorite point, you can restrict to that point and you get an actual endomorphism of M. And everything is linear in terms of the K-theory classes of those points.
You get the W algebra, which parameters are going to be trivial or?
I would say the parameters are exactly, they're trivial because they are the restrictions of the tangent weights to that point. So if you're working equivariantly and you're restricting to a fixed point, then you will get some of the equivariant weights at that point. Okay. So this is theorem one, and I do realize I owe you a definition of this algebra, and I will pay my debt. But I do want to state theorem two. So theorem two is a statement about the contribution of bifundamental matter in this business. So I'm not going to say much about the meaning of bifundamental matter. I'm just going to state the theorem. So the bifundamental matter contribution to gauge theory which algebra geometrically is encoded by the so-called Kext operator, which I'll define by the Ext operator of Karlsson-Okunkov. This operator is denoted by AM, goes from the K-theory of the moduli space to the K-theory of the moduli space. Here, Chem is a chosen line bundle on S, essentially. And I'm using Chem prime here because I do want to indicate that you can define this operator if this moduli space is different from this moduli space. I want them to have the same rank, but a priori they could correspond to different first Hern classes. So I have to tell you what this operator is, but let me just finish the sentence here. So the sentence is that the X operator, which encodes bifundamental matter, commutes, and this term will also be explained. So I'm going to put it in quotes, and I will explain it in a bit, with the W algebra action on Km. Algebra action on Km. So modulo, the quotes which I put around the word commutes, you can think of the sixth operator as being an intertwiner for a W algebra action. And here's what the extra operator is. So you take the product of two moduli spaces of sheaves. One of them is called M and the other one is called M prime, because in principle they could have, they could correspond to different Chern classes. Take the projection maps pi 1 and pi 2. Over here, on top of this product of moduli spaces, you can put an, a virtual vector bundle. And to describe it, I'm going to tell you what its fibers are. So the fiber of this vector bundle above a point in here is parametrized by two sheaves. And the fiber over here will be R home. That's why I said it's a virtual vector bundle, because it's actually a linear combination of things. From F prime to F tensor M. And the definition of the extra operator is AM is equal to pi 1 lower star, the exterior algebra of this virtual vector bundle EM times pi 2 upper star. So the extra operator is given by his correspondence here, where you decorate a product with a K-theory class that is precisely the top exterior power of this R-Hom vector bundle. I guess instead of R-Hom, I should have called it X. That's why it's called the X operator. So this gives us an operator. It's a well-defined endomorphism of this space. And I will tell you explicitly what it means for it to commute with the W algebra action. But before I do so, I should tell you what the W algebra is. So I'm going to keep you in suspense for just a couple of minutes. Let me just say that in the case when the surface is A2 and you work equivalently, this commutation property determines the X operator completely. And this leads to the following prediction of AGT. So the partition function of gauge theory with bifundamental matter, which is essentially a matrix coefficient of a composition of these operators, can be realized as conformal blocks for the W algebra as a consequence of this commutation. For an arbitrary surface, however, the property which I'm about to say is not enough to determine this operator completely. The operator is just too big, because the K theory of the moduli space is too big to be completely determined by its commutation with this algebra. But nevertheless, it's going to be a nice formula. So before I tell you what the formula is, I owe you the definition of a W algebra. So this has been defined about 20-something years ago by a certain subset of Fagin, Frenkel, and Reshetykin. There were actually two papers, and I'm not going to go into the history of these, and independently, work of Awata, Kubo, Odaki, and Shiraishi, they actually just published a single paper. And they defined this algebra in a very explicit way by generators and relations. So they said the algebra W, Q1, Q2, GLR is the Z Q1, Q2. So the parameter ring, as before, is symmetric expressions in these parameters Q1 and Q2. Algebra, which has generators denoted by W, D, comma, K. The number D, and these are the gradings that you were asking about, these go, the D grading goes over all the integers, and the K grading just goes from 1 to R. Modulo a bunch of quadratic relations. And I want to stress the fact that these relations are quadratic, which makes them, well, at least in principle, pretty easy. And this is actually a property which, as far as I know, does not hold for the non-deformed W algebras. Presenting them as being cut out by quadratic relations is not the case in that setting. But for the deformed W algebra, you can present them in this way. To tell you what these quadratic relations are, let's package these generators in terms of fields. So let's write WK of X as being the sum over all D integers, WDK divided by X to the power D. So I'm taking the generating function of a generating series of these symbols for fixed K. And the quadratic relation looks as follows. WKX, you will recognize a similarity with vertex operator algebras, WLY minus WLY WKX is equal to, well, before I tell you what it is equal to, I have to tell you exactly what goes here and here. If it were just the way I stated it, then this algebra would be commutative and not very interesting. It is not commutative because over here you have to put a certain power series in y over x, and this power series is the following: product from I goes from max 0k minus l to k minus 1, and here you have a product going the other way, l minus 1, and the function you put here is zeta y divided by x q to the I, and here you put zeta x divided by y q to the I, where zeta, let's write zeta here because it's actually a very important function in the theory, zeta of x is equal to 1 minus x q1, 1 minus x q2, 1 minus x times 1 minus x q. Remember that q is equal to q1, q2. So this thing is equal to, is going to be equal to 1 minus q1, 1 minus q2, because I promised you that the commutators of everything is a multiple of 1 minus q1, 1 minus q2. And over here, you're going to have a sum going over various i's. I'm not going to write the exact formula because it's not extremely important. You do wix, wk plus l minus iy, and then you multiply with a certain delta function, a certain power of q here that I'm not going to recall, and there's a constant which depends on, I guess, I, k, and l. And this constant lives in the ground ring. So I don't want to bore you with what these constants are. The point is that, well, these formulas are quadratic, but they are equalities of power series. So we have to say exactly how we make sense of these. The way you make sense of the left-hand side, which is the one I want to focus on, is you expand the first term in the region where y is less than, is smaller than x, and you expand the second term in the region where x is smaller than y. And then you just equate coefficients of x to the power whatever and y to the power or whatever. If you do that, then what you will get in the left-hand side, the nice thing about these functions here is that when you expand them near zero or infinity, they are equal to 1 plus a multiple of 1 minus q1, 1 minus q2. So what you will get from this formula is that any the commutator of wdk with wd prime l is equal to 1 minus q1, 1 minus q2 times other products. And all of the products which appear are quadratic. The structure constants are complicated, and I don't want to bother you with them, but this is the general structure of the algebra.
How do you expand the
side? That you have to be careful about. You have to define some contour integrals, and there's a subtlety there, but it was already recognized by these people 25 years ago. So they actually gave a prescription of how to expand the right-hand side. In a certain sense, it's a recursive procedure. But I just want to leave it at that for now. All right, I owe you the commutativity property here, and I have to pay my debt. So the property is that the operator AM, composed with phi WKX times 1 minus X, is equal to M to the power K phi WK gamma X. And once again, I owe you a lot of explanations. Composed with AM. So on the face of it, you have a formula where AM times an element of this algebra, phi just says how elements of the algebra act on the K-theory. You have KM composed with an element of the algebra is equal to an element of the algebra composed with AM. So it is a commutativity-like property. But you don't get the commutativity with a single WDK. You just get this kind of a vertex operator-like formula where all the series WKX appears. That's the smallest thing, the smallest observation I have to make about this formula. The more fundamental thing is, what does this formula mean? This formula is an identity of operators, not from KM, not from KM prime to KM, but from K of M prime to K of M times S. which kind of makes sense because every one of these operators phi, it adds an extra factor of s. So the left-hand side and the right-hand side will not map you in Km, but they will map you in Km times s. The only operator which does not include a factor of s and just acts on M itself is Am. Well, finally, how do you multiply with M? Well, M is a line bundle on S, so multiplying with M just means multiplying on the S factor. That's pretty harmless. The same thing with Q to the power K. The presence of Q to the power K here means that you multiply by it in the S factor. And if you think of everything as being an algebra over the K theory of S, then these are just constants. I do owe you a definition of this gamma. This gamma, which appears over here, is m to the r, q to the r, determinant of f divided by determinant of f prime. So essentially, this is a ratio of the determinants of the universal sheaves that correspond to the moduli space m and to the moduli space m prime. So often you will see me, and I kind of realize I'm doing it now, sometimes I will just write m is equal to mr, because fundamentally, the rank has to be the same in everything that happened. I do not know an analog of this property if the rank of this moduli space is different from the rank of this other moduli space. So proving this formula, it really strongly requires that the rank of the sheaves here and here are equal. Anyway, so these are the main theorems and what they mean algebra-geometrically. I actually want to spend a bit of time on theorem one and explaining kind of how it comes about. But if there are any questions about the statements, it would be a good time. So what can we say about the W algebra over here? Well, the things I explained in words that you can think of this expression as a commutation property that gives you the commutator of WDK with WD prime L modulo some terms that you have to account for, actually has a very interesting corollary. Well, not very interesting, but very useful for the purpose of this work. The corollary is that you can actually work out a basis of this algebra as a module over the ground ring given by products of WDKs in a certain order. So in other words, the WDKs can function as a PBW basis for this algebra. In a mathematical statement, I will say that WQ1, Q2, GLR has a basis ZQ1 plus minus 1, Q2 plus minus 1 basis given by products, which are WD1, K1, WDK, DN, KN, where the Ds are in the following order. So D1 over K1 less than or equal to DN over KN. There is a small lie here. So a lie is in the fact that if you use this relation to express the commutator of two generators as products of some other generators, the formulas you will encounter are infinite sums. So this does not hold on the nose. You have to complete this algebra in a certain sense. So this completion here means that you allow infinite sums. So there's a little bit of a subtlety here. All right, so you stumble upon this corollary. It looks a lot like the property of another algebra which has to do with moduli spaces of sheaves and instantons, namely the algebra quantum toroidal GL1 hat. Quantum toroidal GL1. So this looks a lot like the PBW basis of UQ1, Q2, GL1 hat. So I'll give you a definition of this algebra, and I'll give you the definition in the presentation of Burman and Schiffman. They say that this algebra is UQ1, Q2, of GL1 hat is the algebra over the same parameter ring as always, Q2 plus minus sim, algebra generated by symbols called EKD. And to keep my life easy, I'm just gonna take d to be integer and k to be positive. So what this will give you is not the whole algebra here, but just like half of it, and we'll just work with that half. Algebra generated by these symbols modulo the following relations. So here are the relations in this algebra. They are, I think, extremely nice. There is a very clear formula for the commutator of a single EDK with a single ED prime K prime. And the answer is that in the right-hand side, you will get a multiple of 1 minus Q1, 1 minus Q2, as always. And the expression you will encounter here is a sum over all D1 K1 less than Dn Kn less than D over K less than D prime over K prime. So I'm assuming that the order of the slopes of these points are such that the primes are smaller than the non-primes. Over here, you put E D1 K1 E Dn Kn times a certain constant, which lives in the ground ring. And the fact that I'm not giving you a formula for it is not a matter of laziness. This constant can only be determined algorithmically, so recursively. There's an algorithm which allows you to recursively compute these formulas, these constants, but there is no closed formula. So what does this mean, combinatorially at least? It means that if this is the origin of the plane, and this is the vector dk, and this is the vector d prime k prime, we'll draw the parallelogram built on these vectors. This here is also the vector d prime k prime. It's saying that the commutator of the generators corresponding to this vector and this vector is equal to a linear combination of products which are essentially indexed by convex paths inside one of the triangles over there. So let me draw for you a convex path. Here's an example of a convex path. This vector here would be d1 k1 dot dot dot, and this one would be dn kn, where n is arbitrary, and you can take any convex path through the lattice points in one of these triangles. The constants are determined recursively, as I said, by the case when the triangle here has no lattice points inside. And if you don't have any lattice points inside this triangle, you don't really have a lot of paths inside it. Essentially, the commutator of these two edges will just be E corresponding to the sum. And the constant is 1 in that case. You need a slight strengthening of this case in order to determine these constants for arbitrary triangles. I don't want to get into the combinatorics. It was all worked out by Burman and Schiffman. But this is what it means. So you have two algebras, which both have generators indexed by essentially points in the upper half plane. You can ask, are they the same? Well, they're not really going to be the same, because the formulas here look very different from the formulas here. So these ones are quadratic, and they are fundamentally built on infinite sums and series. And these ones are very combinatorial, but they're not quadratic, because over here you can get pretty complicated tails. Well, here's how to connect them. So here's a definition or a theorem. Let me call this a theorem. So define the following elements inside the quantum toroidal. Define the elements W dk prime is going to be a sum of these e's, e d1 k1, e dn kn. And the constant here is actually nice, so I'm going to tell you what it is. So it's product from I goes from 1 to n minus q ki minus gcd ki di times q. It's invisible. All right, I apologize for that. Let me just write, let me not waste everybody's time and just say a minus 1 to a certain power, q to a certain power. It's visible but meaningless, which is, it's a wonderful compromise. So yeah, I mean, you know, powers of q are pretty innocuous and powers of minus 1 are innocuous. But the important thing is what this sum goes over. So it goes over all d's with some d, all k's with some k. Implicitly, the d's are all integers, and the k's are all non-negative. And you keep the ordering which we have over there, but they have to be, the slopes actually have to be different. So this is what the formula for w dk prime is. And these actually will be elements not in the quantum toroidal, GL one hat hat plus, but they will actually be in a completion of this, where completion, as always, just means that you allow such infinite sums. I could be a bit more precise about what this condition means, but I think this formula is good. Well, so right now I haven't really made a statement in this theorem. The statement is that these WDKs, DK prime, satisfy the quadratic relations of the W algebra. So they satisfy relations star, this is star, instead of WDK. And can give an isomorphism between the W algebra, the deformed W algebra of type GLR, and the quotient of this quantum toroidal thing modulo the two-sided ideal generated by WDK prime, where D is arbitrary integer and K is bigger than R. So what's going on here? The W algebra only is generated by these things where K is between 1 and R. In other words, the W algebra just has R generating fields. The quantum toroidal actually has these for all natural numbers K. So what this formula is saying is that if you want to get the W algebra from quantum toroidal, you have to kill all those W's whose index is not as they should be. And explicitly in this, it just means that the second index should be bigger than R. So this gives an explicit presentation for the deformed W algebra as a quotient of, you know, something which is like a quantum group. And I should say that this thing is, this isomorphism here is an affine Q-deformed version of the construction of Brundan-Hlischow. So I'm not going to go into detail into what they proved, especially since the affine case is very different from the finite case. But philosophically, so they proved, they realized the finite W algebra in type A as quotients of a Yangian in type A, a shifted Yangian, actually, if one is to be completely honest. So if the deformation of a Yangian is quantum toroidal, a deformation of a W algebra are deformed W algebras, going from the finite to the affine case, you would go from the Yangian to toroidal algebras, and this statement here would just be an analog of this statement in this in the affine setup. So philosophically, I like to think of this as a version of their statement. But the construction, it's given completely differently because it strongly uses this presentation by Burban and Schiffman of the quantum toroidal. Okay, so how do we prove theorem one? Having all of this at our disposal, well, fortunately, it's been known for quite a long time now that the quantum toroidal algebra acts on the K-theory groups that we want. So let me actually write what is known. Classical theorem. Let's give it a number. So this one was proved by Schiffman, Vassarow, and Fagin, Tsumbaliuk in For the Plane. For the equivariant plane, And I prove it for general S. So the statement here is that this quantum toroidal thing, it acts on Km in the sense that that I wrote over here. So if you have this theorem, how do you show that a W algebra acts on the K theory? Well, the W algebra is a quotient of the completion of quantum toroidal. So you have to prove two things. Let me actually spell them out. To deduce theorem one, you must show that, well, first of all, you must show that the completion acts correctly. So uq1, q2, gl1 hat 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 acts correctly on km. And this is a consequence of the fact that the C2 of stable sheaves is bounded below. So it follows from, essentially from the Bogomolov inequality, follows from the fact that C2 bounded below. So why is that? Well, as we have seen, his completion business here means that you allow infinite sums of this form over here. The operators E, D, K have the property that they increase, no, they decrease the second Chern class of sheaves by D. So if you have an operator like this for D1 really small and Dn really big, what E, Dn, Kn will do is it will kill any given K-theory class if Dn is large enough, because it will take it from the moduli space of stable sheaves with C2 to the moduli space of stable sheaves with E2 minus a very big D. If C2 is bounded below, for really big D, you're going to get zero. And because of this, a completion acts correctly on Km. So this is the first thing you have to show. The second thing you have to show is that the elements which we call WDK prime act as zero in K theory. And this is what I would like to explain from a geometric sense now. But if there are any questions about what happened so far, I think it's a good point to ask. Okay? So what does it mean that WDK acts as zero? Can I write over here? Is this fair game?
For us, it's
okay. So let's write it over here. So with a little bit of work, we can actually give an explicit correspondence for the action of this WDK on K theory. Which is about time, because I had promised you for a while to show you how this action works. I will show you how these elements WDK act on K theory. Show that WDK is actually DK prime acts on K theory as the following correspondence. The correspondence, here it goes. It's an infinite sum. It's a sum over all k0, k1, k2 positive, d0, d2 non-negative. The sum of the k's is k, and d2 minus d1 is d. So for fixed d and fixed k, you have two choices for these numbers here, but there are finitely many choices because they all have to be positive. The d's, on the other hand, because they're only constrained by this condition, there are countably many d's, countably many choices of D2 and D1, and therefore countably many sum ends in this formula. The formula is the following: sum of P1 lower star, and here I'm going to do P2 upper star, and here I'm going to write down a K-theory class, and I'll define P1 and P2 for you in a second. The K-theory class is this thing, U, L1 to the K1, L2 to the K2, and then times plus or minus a line bundle, which I'm not going to write down because it doesn't depend on K. It only depends on D1 and D2. All right, the fundamental thing is, what are these P1s and P2s here, and how do they give an operator on K theory? Well, let me show you what they are. Consider the following locus, the correspondence given by such pairs of nested sheaves. F prime, where oh, let me actually put an X here. And let me tell you that the meaning of F inside F prime with an X underneath is that F is contained inside F prime, and the quotient is isomorphic to the skyscraper sheaf at X. We assume we're over an algebraically closed field, so this is all good. So this is, well, it's a moduli space of flags of sheaves. It's defined in a sense in which I won't necessarily make it precise, but it has a bunch of maps. They're called P1 and P2. This one goes to M and it only remembers F. This one goes to M and it only remembers F prime. And it actually has one more map because the point X here where the quotients of these sheaves are supported is allowed to vary. So let's also call this P sub X. This can remember a point X in the surface. So really I should tell you that over here you should put P1 times PS, push forward, PS. So what's going on here? We have this moduli space of sheaves which we use as a correspondence from the forgetful maps that only remember the first and the last sheaf of this flag. We can define a pull push, and I claim that the operator here is equal to the sum of those pull pushes. There's a K-theory class here. Let me tell you what the class is. So L1 is the line bundle whose fibers are gamma of F tilde mod F1. L2 is the line bundle whose fibers are F tilde mod F2. So F tilde and F1 are sheaves of colength 1. Their quotient is a length 1 sheaf. The space of sections of that length 1 sheaf is a one-dimensional space, so it gives us a line bundle on this moduli space. And U tilde is just the universal sheaf parametrizing the sheaf that is denoted by F tilde. And the line bundle, which I'm not writing down, just makes the formula a bit complicated. So I'll skip it for now. Anyway, statement one is that WDK prime acts as this sum of operators, of explicit geometric operators. Statement two is that this sum of explicit geometric operators is zero. And actually, this is a statement which I can prove not just in K-theory, you can actually prove this in DB Koch of M. Maybe I should put Koch M is good here. So in the derived category, you would replace the sum by an extension, an explicit collection of extensions, and that's pretty much it. There are some minus signs here. For example, there's minus 1 to the k0. You have to deal with that. So in the derived category, it's going to correspond to some shifts. But the point is that this relation here is actually an algebraic geometric relation, and it fundamentally holds in the moduli space of rank R sheaves. And fortunately for us, it's exactly what corresponds to the operators called WDK prime. And as a consequence of this relation, WDK prime acts by zero, and theorem one follows. Am I out of time? Okay. Well, it
starts at a bit late.
So do I have an hour or 50 minutes? Oh, I still have 10 minutes. Well, you know. Oh, no, I mean, I do. I can speak for 2 more hours, but that would be pushing it just a little bit. I do want to mention a generalization, which is actually a work in progress, and I'm just going to state it extremely quickly. But if there are any questions about what happened until now, it's a good time to take a break. So there's a version of all of these where sheaves are replaced by parabolic sheaves. And this is what I wanted to mention. So not everything in this picture is understood. I mean, I don't understand it for parabolic sheaves, but I do understand a bunch of things, and I just want to tell you what I understand. So what's a parabolic sheaf? Instead of having a rank R, fix a collection of natural numbers R1 through Rn. The moduli space, instead of being just the moduli space indexed by a single rank and the single first Chern class, this MR1.Rn is the moduli space of parabolic sheaves. So I have to tell you what the parabolic sheaf is. F bullet. So a parabolic sheaf, F bullet, is actually a collection of sheaves which sit inside each other. So F0 sits inside F1, sits inside the dot Fn. And the very important property of being a parabolic sheaf means that you fix a smooth divisor D on the surface, and you require the smallest sheaf to be the same as a bigger sheaf twisted by minus D. So that's what it means to be a parabolic sheaf. There's a stability condition on these sheaves that people have known for quite a while, which allows you to define a moduli space. These numbers here, R1 through Rn, are just the successive difference in first Chern classes between these sheaves. So the condition here is that if you do C1 of Fi is equal to C1 of Fi minus 1 plus Ri times the divisor D. So this is you have a moduli space, you can study its K-theory, and you can ask, what is the analog of theorem 1? Well, the expectation that people have, and by expectation that people have, I actually mean that this is a suggestion which was casually made by Braverman a few months ago. So I'm not going to call it his conjecture because he's not here and it wouldn't be honorable, but the expectation would be that K of M R1 Rn should be a module for some other formed W algebra. And once again, this is vague, and I would like to ask people in this audience if they think that this expectation is reasonable, or if we have to change it a bit. I'm open to changing it. So this algebra, well, W algebras, which I have defined, are indexes, are essentially the ones which correspond to a principal nilpotent in GLR, but you can also do W algebras which corresponds to a nilpotent of Jordan decomposition R1 dot 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 Rn. It's a nilpotent in GLR, so it's going to correspond to a partition, essentially, R1 Rn. The only problem with this algebra is that it hasn't been defined. So this is a to be defined, like the actual W algebra has been defined, but the formed W algebra for arbitrary nilpotent, to the best of my knowledge, hasn't been defined. In a certain sense, I'm going to give you a definition of something that could be put here, but the reason why this whole is work in progress is because I can't prove that it actually deserves this name. All right, so what can I put in place of this algebra? It's been known for quite a while, and in the most general formulation, in the case of A2, I'm going to state it for arbitrary surface, but the main structure was proved recently by Finkelberg and Sambaliuk. So they showed that this object is a module for the shifted quantum toroidal algebra of type GLn. So instead of GL1, there's a notion of this shifted quantum toroidal. The R's here, they correspond to the shift. And this thing acts on K of M R1 dot 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 Rn. So then the hope is that we can play the same game as we played over here, that we can find some elements inside here that act by zero, and hope that the algebra you really want is the quotient of this quantum toroidal by those elements.
Andrei, may I ask a question?
Yes, sir.
So the moduli space, it's a stable type of, do you have some stability condition?
Oh, yeah. We certainly need a stability condition.
What should be the generalization of quantum toroidal GL1 that you should have?
Quantum toroidal GLn, which is shifted by R1 through Rn.
And the operators should be given by what kind of correspondences?
Well, just like Hinkelberg and Sambaliuk in the A2 case, they actually define them the same kind of natural correspondences. So the simple correspondences that are indexed by a single vertex in the Dinkin diagram, they modify a parabolic sheaf at the ith spot. It is the standard thing that people have known for quite a while, but they have recently proved it in this big generality. Partial results about this were about these Lomon spaces, which are like the case 1, 1, 1, 1, 1. Okay, so what do I want to say in the last 2 minutes? Let's find elements F1 dot 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 inside this quantum toroidal. Which act by zero in the K theory of the moduli space, and hope that the quotient is algebra we're looking for. So I'm gonna leave this here because I want to compare with it. The answer is the following operators act by zero in the K theory. So this is actually a theorem. The following operators act by zero in K of M. Here they are. So what you do is you fix a pair I and J inside Z2 mod NNZ, and you fix a number K, which is a bit bigger than the maximal of the Rs. The claim is that the following operator acts by zero, summation for all k0 plus k1 plus k2 is equal to k. The ki's are positive. The sum here goes over all s, which is less than or equal to I and j. You will see that it actually matches the sum in the far left side. So p1 times ps push forward. Here you have a line bundle as before. I'm not going to write it down. So a line bundle as on the left board. It's actually almost literally the same line bundle times P2 upper star. And the only interesting thing is what these maps are over. So you replace the space of flags of sheaves as in the right side by the following correspondence. So now you have inclusions of parabolic sheaves. I'll say in a sec what these are, where as before you have P1, PS, and P2, which remember F prime and the point X. All the inclusions are supported at the point X, but these inclusions are also decorated by a number. This number here is S over here, S plus 1 dot 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 J minus 1. Here you have S plus 1 dot 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 I minus 1. And I just have to tell you what this means. Well, to say that a parabolic sheaf F prime is contained inside this and to put the point X and the index I, what you really mean is that all you have a bunch of inclusions from these sheaves to these sheaves. And all of these inclusions are identities, except the one on the ith spot, which is an actual inclusion of colength 1. So fi prime is isomorphic to cx. So that is the meaning of the correspondence which I wrote over here. And it's an algebraic geometric object. Thank you very much, and I apologize for going over time. Thank you. Yes. There's a formula for all k, and in the right hand side you have some class that will only vanish if k is big. So the way you prove this is you do a little bit of intersection theory. Each of these commands is equal to ak minus bk, where ak and bk are two correspondences, and then you show that bk plus 1 is equal to ak. So you have what I'm saying is extremely silly. I'm saying that if you have summation of pk and pk is equal to ak minus ak plus minus bk, and if you show that ak plus 1 is equal to bk, and I guess you also need to show that a0 is 0, then this sum is 0. So that's exactly what's happening here, and AK and BK are explicit Heichels.
Is there somehow, like you say
say this is a lift to Courier Cheese.
Mm-hmm.
And you have this wedge power is k, and somehow there's no like simple reason like for large enough k. This is a closer resolution of some object, exact or something.
No, I mean I wouldn't. Yeah, I mean it's essentially a complex which is built on the space of a single pair like this, in the case where you have just one inclusion like this and one inclusion like that. You introduce an auxiliary space, and then the cycles which I call AK and BK are pushed forwards to this variety from the auxiliary space. And then you prove an identity on the auxiliary space, and then it pushes forward to an identity on this derived category. But I haven't told you what the auxiliary space is, so sorry.
This parabolic version of double algebra, it's also universal with respect to the surface.
Yeah, it doesn't see a surface. So both for the quantum, well, I mean, for the action of the quantum toroidal here, I mean it in the same sense as over here. So any element in the quantum toroidal algebra, it gives not an endomorphism of Km, but a homomorphism, which keeps track of the point in S. So it's universal in the same sense. Yes?
We have some kind of geometrical algebra construction for this shifted toroidal geometry.
No, I don't know of it. And actually, even I should say, it's a very good question. So QQGL1 hat hat is the whole algebra of a category of elliptic curves. I think GLN hat hat, I've seen constructions, but I'm not sure how complete they are. It should correspond to a certain whole algebra of certain coherent sheaves on a cycle of P1s. So you would have a degenerate elliptic curve, which is a cycle of P1s, and you have to properly find what it means to have a coherent sheaf on this cycle of P1s. There's a certain category. Presumably, even though I'm not sure if it's a theorem or just an expectation, the whole algebra of that category should give GLN cat hat. But I don't know how much of this is actual fact and how much of it is a hope.
Why is it important for you to keep track of this whole like flag of coherent sheaves in between the two, as opposed to just some guy that's kind of?
Well, that's I would say this is the thing which works. I mean, you could translate. Hate everything by saying, look, we have this big flag thing, and we push it forward to m times m times x. And then everything is going to be a class in the key theory of m times x, but it's going to be a very complicated class. The only thing I can say about it is that it comes from the push forward from this big moduli space. So the equation here is a simple combination of line bundles on this complicated moduli space. If you push it forward, you're going to have a very complicated expression that I don't know how to write down on a simple moduli space. So it's a trade-off. To keep your class here simple, you have to make your moduli space complicated. It just is.
But like if you did something more naive where you just took something of co-length n on each side or something.
That's the subject of a subtlety that I haven't really said anything about. So this thing here is not actually a scheme. It's a derived scheme that you have to properly define in a derived sense. If you forget about the intermediary flags and you just take the scheme that has this thing contained inside this thing of co-length n, I don't know how to put the correct derived structure on that thing, except the push forward of the derived structure I know on this thing. So it's a fact that if you have this flag of sheaves in a derived sense, it's much simpler than just having one sheaf containing another of co-length n. That's a complicated beast.
In this setting, or maybe in any setting, you never consider correspondences that like are modifying the sheaves along.
No, that's a complicated correspondence. So there is a lot of recent work in a subject. So there's a work of Misha and Vasro, who defined the koha. And I have a student, Yu Zhao, who also defined a partial version of their koha. You can define an algebra which acts as this algebra does. So this is an algebra which only modifies sheaves at points. They define algebras, well, at least Hisha and Derek to find an algebra which also presumably modifies sheaves along curves. But it's hard to get it to act on a moduli space of stable sheaves, because if you have a stable sheaf and you modify it along a divisor, it's no longer going to be stable. So then you have issues of compactness, and it's not clear how to get an actual action on a moduli space. Probably, you know, if you just work with the appropriately defined K-theory of a stack of all coherent sheaves, you can do it. But then you lose a lot of fundamental properties, like the fact that a second Chern class of stable sheaves is bounded below. I cannot do these infinite sums if the second Chern class is not bounded below. So I cannot do this construction on the stack of all coherent sheaves.
So maybe it should be kind of analog of stable pairs. It's not really the condition that the dimension of support is fixed by some kind of condition similar to the recombinant torus in dimension 3.
I'm not sure if one should approve if that's I haven't actually thought if that would be a good choice, but indeed it's not clear.
If you have this parabolic case, can you obtain the non-parabolic case by some kind of simplification?
Well, the non-parabolic case is n is equal to 1, I would say. So if you do n is equal to 1, you just have parabolic sheaves that parametrizes F1, which contains a sided F0, which is F1 twisted by minus D. So you just have a single sheaf. But you probably asked something smarter. That certainly is smarter. No, I haven't thought about that. I'm sorry. But that's a good point. No, that would, I think, lead to more complicated moduli spaces if you want to keep track of that structure. You know, I should be extremely careful as to what I state, because as I said, these theorems are work in progress. The thing is that in this algebra action, the commutation relations between these operators are all local on the surface. So it's kind of independent. As long as it's smooth, as long as the surface and the divisor is smooth, it should all behave like A1 inside A2.
Of certain effects
oh, yeah.
modules for these algebras related to mm-hmm. covariant integrals. Do you know how to recover those results from like these?
No. I don't understand. I mean, I don't even
uniform version.
I don't even understand these algebras themselves enough, much less representation theory. If you go from the toroidal to the affine case, I do understand. So I do have a result which computes. Well, actually, no, I'm sorry, I'm lying. I do have a result which actually applies to the M11111 case. And the corresponding Braverman-like norm can be presented in terms of GLN hat inside GLN hat hat. So I can do an analog of Braverman stuff if you do M11111 here. But for arbitrary Rs, I don't understand the algebra well enough to mimic that construction, yet, at least.
Do you know the free field representation of this?
Like No. I would like to. So the thing I'm trying to do now is take essentially the construction over here, which leads to explicit elements in the quantum toroidal, and I want to obtain from it the free field realization of the quotient. So I know it yet in the case when the R's are all equal. So if you do M11111, essentially you just have affine GLN. But if you do 2222 or RRRR, you get a bigger algebra, which whose free field realization I understand, but I don't know yet how to generalize it to arbitrary shifts. That part is work in progress.
Can I just ask, in the case of cohomology instead of K-theory, then the question again?
The results are...
Because then you understand the algebra, obviously.
We can certainly generate the results from K-theory to cohomology. So if you have a computation of that norm, which is like the integral of 1, you can degenerate it from K-theory to cohomology, but the methods along the way, I don't think you can degenerate them. And the reason for that is embedded in the fact that relations between the generators of the QW algebra do not degenerate nicely. That's why the QW algebra is given by quadratic relation, while W algebras are given by complicated relations that we don't know. So the algebra does not degenerate. The presentation of the algebra through generators and relations does not degenerate well. That's what I'd say.
Ramified version of this story.
Ah. I haven't thought about them, but I think, you know, is it known if moduli spaces of parabolic sheaves in the generality can be considered to be moduli spaces of sheaves ramified? Yeah, that's what I think you can say. So Francesco has work about this, I think.
I mean, you're only fixing one divisor and you do the root stack construction along one of them. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I wouldn't know how to change the divisor in this stuff.
Well, you could have something where you have something like cuts Moody.
Yeah, I mean, but I think that cuts Moody would be... I would not know a priori how the cuts Moody is corresponding to different front divisors would interact. And that's probably hard. I mean, I really have no idea how it would work.
Other questions then?
Thank you very much.